This is CBS, Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Climate and the COP27 meeting in Egypt. We go to Canada to find out North American policy. Conrad Black, writing for the National Post, is here. First to comment on Canadian policy with regard to climate, and then to move to the story of the so-called fixed science of climate change. Conrad, a very good evening to you. I start with a report at the National Observer. The fall economic statement included the first concrete steps to future-proof Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's key climate legacy, carbon pricing, which, if I understand correctly, is being opposed by the Conservative Party of Canada, especially the new leader, Pierre Poilievre. What is the sense of Canada right now and its carbon, its fossil fuel riches? Is the nation on one side or the other of this matter? Good evening to you.
Yeah, good evening to you, John. I think the, as in a lot of other countries, I think there's now a fair bit of confusion. As you know, and this would apply to the United States as well, the advocates of winding down fossil fuel use had a free field for a long time. I mean, nobody that anyone paid any attention to was seriously contradicting them. But now that we're into difficult economic times and people can see that as production of oil is reduced, the cost of petroleum products and related products goes up and is the great rocket under inflation generally, and it's terribly inconvenient, indeed brings great hardship to the entire people of a range of people of modest economic means and the middle class. The whole politics of it changes, and those who are highly inconvenienced by energy policy based on the fastest possible development of so-called sustainable resources, the political cost of doing it is such that the slackening of political enthusiasm to do it follows inevitably. And I think we're in that phase now. You have a large part of the country here that particularly from the oil producing areas, Alberta and Saskatchewan, never bought into the government's position. They are now joined by the great bulk of people in Ontario, or about 40% of the whole population, who it's a jurisdiction where no oil is produced, but a great deal is consumed. And they don't want to hear any more about ecology right now. And it happens to be compounded in Ontario by the fact that the former government of Ontario shut down some power plants for ecological reasons that have proved to be entirely spurious. So the cost of electricity to everyone in the province have gone up. And so I think you're getting that tug of war between the old ecological purists who really bought a line, in my opinion. I mean, everyone is opposed to pollution, but the idea that any use of greenhouse gases at all or any production of them was a threat to the survival of the planet is just nonsense and is being exposed to such. So you get this tug of war between the eco purists and the practical people who can't afford it and are tired of sacrificing for the sake of a very uncertain objective. And if you take the metaphor, the teeter totter is tipping back the other way now.
I connect this to a column you published in September that is especially useful now that we're looking at COP27. And its declarations of imminent catastrophe in the near future. An existential threat is how climate change is presented in the United States, even in national security strategy documents. You write about the climate intelligence, CLINTEL, a foundation, and its World Climate Declaration with 1,000 signatories at the time. This is late August when you published this document. It's a product of two men from two Dutchmen, one a Professor Burkhout, a former petroleum engineer, and another one, Marcel Krok, a journalist, a science journalist. And what I learned from these men is that with all these signatories, that the so-called settled science is not settled at all. And the puzzle is why we don't see more of this debate now that we're into spending money or are costing us money to be cautious about fossil fuels. Is this debate in Canada now, what this document points to, that the certainty of the Trudeau government is not certainty, it's a political position?
I don't think the country as a whole has got to that. I mean, you're asking in one sense the wrong person in that I've been saying that without interruption or variation for years. So, the temptation is for me to say, well, yes, of course, everything's turning out as I predicted. But I can't say that because but what I do think is you've now got what I said earlier. You've got a lot of people, a great many people saying, well, that may be, but the most urgent problem now is that we're moving too fast to try and go from petroleum-based energy and other products to use of sustainable resources and other petroleum alternatives. And you can't do it quickly without it costing more than a great many people can afford. And but also you get, and this is, I think, exactly the along the lines of your question, you get a good many people who sort of fell in behind the conventional wisdom that we had to roll back fossil fuel use or we were going to flood ourselves out and be living on mountaintops and ultimately perish. They just fell in behind that because that appeared to be what everyone was saying. Those people who were not really partisans of the true ecological faith have flaked off, and they're now sort of neutral. And now that the wind is blowing from a different direction, you don't hear them agitating for or voting for climate change militants the way they did. So you haven't got a full change of tide, but it's like when the tide is no longer coming in and started to go out, and you get sort of slightly disturbed currents, and that's where we are, I would say, at this point here.
You give us a list of prominent figures in these last 20 years. Al Gore, who said that super hurricanes would dominate our lives. And then Tony Blair.
And the island of Tuvalu, the country of Tuvalu out in the Pacific, would disappear under the water. And of course, nothing of the kind has happened.
And the very popular British Prime Minister, Tony Blair, said we had a window of only 10 to 15 years. He said that 15 years ago. And even the king.
John, Tony said that, but His Majesty the King, as he now is, gave it only 10 years, and the 10 years have gone by.
The fact that they were wrong, is there an explanation to your knowledge in the general press about why it is that they miss? Because this is all about models, Conrad. It comes back to that, models, and do we trust the models?
Yeah, well, I think the answer is we don't, and some of us never did. But I looked at the basis behind it from that East Anglia outfit, and they were trying to read the rings on trees and so on. It was just a lot of nonsense. You know, it was like people in Greek and Roman times reading the entrails and the innards of sacrificed animals and things. You know, but I think that what you have is the apologists say, all right, their time estimate was mistaken, but the threat is there, the threat is real. They're absolutely right. The Prince of Wales, now the King, the former Prime Minister Tony Blair and Al Gore and these other people, they spoke in good faith. They were perceptive. They were ahead of their time. They just got the time scale wrong. That's what the apologists say, but a growing number say they shot from the hip. They didn't know what they were talking about. In the case of Gore, he made a lot of money out of it. No one questions, I think, the complete disinterested sincerity of the Prince of Wales, now King Charles III, and Tony Blair. I think, and I know them both, and I think they were sincere. I just never agreed with them. But I think people, for the most part, say that we embarked upon a ship before we knew where we were going and what the sailing weather was going to be like, and we'd better re-examine this. I think there's a growing consensus to take a second look at all these assumptions.
Conrad Black, I'm John Batch.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor,